Last week we read from Luke's gospel, which centers around God acting in Mary's life. In Matthew's version of the story, God comes in a dream to Matthew, to Mark rather, or to, I'm sorry, to Joseph. And listen for the word from Matthew chapter 1. This translation has some Hebrew in it, and the names of the folk we know as Mary and Joseph, their Hebrew names, Miriam and Yosef, and Jesus is Yeshua, so don't get stuck on the names.
Here's how the birth of Yeshua the Messiah took place. When his mother Miriam was engaged to Joseph before they were married, she was found to be pregnant from the Ruach HaKodesh, Holy Spirit. Her husband-to-be, Joseph, was a man who did what was right. So he made plans to break the engagement quietly rather than put her to public shame. But while he was thinking about this, an angel of Adonai, the Lord, appeared to him in a dream and said, "Yosef ben David, do not be afraid to take Miriam home with you as your wife. For what has been conceived in her is from the Ruach HaKodesh. She will give birth to a son, and you are to name him Yeshua, which means Yahweh saves, because he will save his people from their sins." All this happened in order to fulfill what Adonai had said through the prophet. The virgin will conceive and bear a son, and they will call him Emmanuel. The name means a God with us. When Joseph awoke, he did what the angel of Adonai told him to do. He took Miriam home to be his wife. But he did not have sexual relations with her until she had given birth to a son. And he named him Yeshua.
Thank you, Roger. Most years, I really like Advent. I relish the darkening skies, the shortening days, and the silence of the woods. Most of the birds have gone south, and the ones that stay are quiet observers. When I walk in the woods in the back of the parsonage, the only sound is the crunch of my shoes on brittle brown leaves. Even as all of the northern part of the northern hemisphere points toward the regular winter cycle of sleep and hibernation and even death, there is a sacred energy about the season that I love. Last week, an owl flew noiselessly right past my head on its way to dispatch a small mammal. My dog never even looked up. Silence. It's an overused metaphor, but the woods are like a cathedral during Advent. Dark, reverent, silent, before the bright snow of deep winter crowns it all in a joyous white. I really like Advent. 4 weeks of quiet like that. But this year, the world broke into my Advent. Most years I have some control over the quiet. I stay far away from the malls and the canned music yakking on about bullying reindeer and chestnuts nipping at your nose. I try with varying success to spend less time online and especially less time on Facebook and Huffington Post. But this year there is no such thing as a quiet season of Advent. This year the world broke into my Advent. The noise and the chaos and the ugliness of the world is crashing through too loudly. Not just the tinny Christmas music, but the life-shattering explosion of bombs, the insidious crackle of AK-47s and AR-15s, the twisted babble of fundamentalists who are so sure their violence is the will of God, and the people they hate just happen to be the people that God hates too. A Christian terrorist claiming to follow Jesus kills parents at a Colorado Planned Parenthood center. Islamic terrorists claiming to follow the Quran kill scores at a Paris nightclub. And this week, it's 14 dead at a Christmas party in San Bernardino. And 4 shot in Georgia the same day, but 4 people hardly makes the U.S. news anymore because it's just another day in America. Because there's been 356 shootings of 4 or more people in the last 365 days. This year, the world broke into my Advent. Now, I normally do not pay any attention at all to a tabloid like the New York Daily News, but this week they moved into theological territory on their cover, and it looks like this. God isn't fixing this. I was confused about what the headline screamed until I saw the smaller boxes with tweets from presidential candidates all offering thoughts and prayers to the victims of the San Bernardino shooting. And the paper seemed to take offense at that. And I was confused about what that meant until I saw, well, not confused. My first reaction was defensive. What's the matter, I thought, with thoughts and prayers? It's what we do. We're Christian. But then I read that the point that the paper was making was that the presidential candidates were only offering thoughts and prayers, while the day before they had voted down some very basic common sense gun registration and background check legislation that 85% of gun owners say they support. The world broke into my Advent. So, in the latter part of the week, hashtag thoughts and prayers went viral all over Twitter from a nation wanting desperately for Washington to do something, anything, to begin to address the violence in our nation, which no other nation on earth even begins to approach. Politicians of all stripes shrug their shoulders after each almost daily massacre of parents and children and cops and clergy and offer thoughts and prayers. The world broke into my Advent. I can't look at the daily news anymore. Could you go to the next slide? But then this week, as I began to read and reread the Advent stories from Matthew and Luke, the gospel stories of God calling Miriam and Yosef, I realized I may have this Advent thing backwards. Reading how 2,000 years ago, God asked this young couple to do this amazing thing, to say yes to God's coming into the world. But remember the world 2,000 years ago? A violent and ugly world of empire and poverty. Reading how, despite the costs to their ordinary peasant lives, to reputation and safety, they each, Mary and Joseph, each thoughtfully and prayerfully and full of praise said, yes. They said yes. Mary with her subversive song called Magnificat, and Joseph in quiet, prayerful obedience to a dream. Mary and Joseph thought. Mary and Joseph prayed. Mary and Joseph said yes. They acted on their yes in ways that would turn the world upside down. I had it backwards. The world is not breaking into my Advent. Advent is about breaking into the world. Advent is breaking into the world. The noise and the cacophony and the violence of the week was not getting in the way of my private little Advent. Rather, God's Advent was again coming into the world, and what is needed, just as 2,000 years ago, is for people of faith and people of love and people of goodwill to say yes to God breaking in. Advent is breaking into the world. So as much as I hate to say it, the New York Daily News is half right. Call the papers. No. They are half right. Thoughts and prayers are not enough. At least if we define thoughts and prayers as meaningless platitudes and warm fuzzies aimed ambiguously toward the daily tragedies of the world. The Bible is pretty clear about this. In the book of James, we hear, if a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, oh, go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill, and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that? So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. Advent is breaking into the world. Now, the New York Daily News is at least half wrong, too. Prayer is necessary as well. The president of Auburn Seminary wrote, prayer creates space. She wrote, space inside the individual, space inside the community, inside the nation, space to allow us to hear the voice of the divine. It invites us to be humble, disrupting our certitude, realizing that we may be on the wrong track. Prayer aligns us with the will of God, not our own. It calls us up short and invites confession. We have fallen short. Repentance. We've got to turn ourselves around. Intercession. We lift up others and our groaning worthy world in order to propel us forward beyond the fear, beyond the isolation, beyond the depression. We grieve and pray, and then we act. Advent breaks into the world. The best of our sacred traditions remind us that we are bound together as those made in the image of God, the Imago Dei, and entrusted with care for each other. As Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. God is calling people of faith and moral courage, whatever your tradition, whatever your politics, to join together in prayer and action to choose life and not more death. This means creating communities. I'll say alternative communities because that's really what a church is now. An alternative community that's based on love and compassion and mercy rather than our communities being based on fear and revenge and anger. 1 Peter 5 says, resist evil, be steadfast in your faith, for you know that your brothers and sisters in all the world are undergoing the same kinds of suffering. In the Bible, the definition of a faith community is not people who can all say the same confession without crossing their fingers. It's not people who believe the same or look the same. A faith community is a people who struggle and suffer for and with each other and for and with the world. Compassion means to suffer with and struggle with and love with and sing with and dance with and live with and be with. A faith community, and this is some dangerously old-fashioned language, a faith community is a community of the righteous. Not the self-righteous. And we get those confused a lot. That's why the word righteous has kind of gone out of fashion. The righteous are always willing to suffer for their beliefs. The self-righteous are always willing for others to suffer for their beliefs. There's a big difference. Advent is breaking into the world. I also don't want to narrow it to just when I say people of faith. I think God is calling people of faith to stretch their boundaries of tradition as well. Some of our greatest allies in the redemption of a broken world are secular folk and atheists of good heart and good will. Rabbi Martin Buber shared this story that comes from the Hasidic tradition. And being a Hasidic tradition, it is, of course, a story. It's not a theological treatise. And the story goes like this. A rabbi was teaching his disciples and talking about how do we find meaning in the world and does God give everything a purpose? So you believe, the disciple asked the rabbi, that God created everything for a purpose? I do, replied the rabbi. Well, asked the snarkily clever disciple, why did God create atheists? The master responded, God created atheists to teach the most important lesson of them all, the lesson of true compassion. You see, when an atheist performs an act of charity, visits someone who is sick, helps someone in need, and cares for the world, he is not doing so because of some religious teaching. He does not believe that God commanded him to perform this act. In fact, he does not believe in God at all, so his acts are based on an inner sense of morality. And look at the kindness he can bestow upon others simply because he feels it is right. This means, the master continued, that when someone reaches out to you for help, you should never say, I pray that God will help you. Instead, for the moment, you should become an atheist. Imagine that there is no God who can help, and say, I will help you. Advent is breaking into the world. John Wesley might have heard that old story, because he once said, pray as if it all depends on God, and act as though it all depends on you. Eric Parker is a pastor with a blog, and he blogged, I hate that as a verb, he blogged this week. He said, Advent stories are coming at us in the news as often as they are coming from the Bible this year. Advent has always beautifully shown us the interweaving of incarnation and reality, but this year, the stories we read and preach and hear in the church are reality in the world. We have become a people waiting for and in need of a Messiah. Advent is our reality, and maybe that is the point. Maybe the point of the real world, or rather, Advent breaking into the real world, is that we need to see the unvarnished, unwhitewashed, naked reality of the world in order to really see it. And Advent becomes the lens through which we can see that clearly. Maybe Advent needs to be real so that we can get that the incarnation is real too. With all the bluster about revenge and taking the other out, we have to remember that God came into the world not with power, but in powerlessness. And the most fragile creature there is, a newborn human infant. That's how God entered the world. Through love and compassion and mercy, God turned the world upside down. A world that worships power, fear, revenge. Jean Vanier, who started the L'Arche communities for developmentally disabled men, said, our brokenness is the wound through which the full power of God can penetrate our being and transfigure us in God. Loneliness is not something from which we must flee, but it is the place from where we can cry out to God, where God will find us and we can find God. Yes, through our wounds, the power of God can penetrate us and become like rivers of living water to irrigate the arid earth within us, and thus we may irrigate the arid earth of others so that hope and love are reborn. Leonard Cohen said it a little more briefly. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. And that's how Advent breaks in, into us and into our world, through the broken places. Don't flee your broken spaces. Meet God there and make a space for the Messiah to be born in you, in this little community of faith, and in the world that so desperately needs it.